Welcome back to RoomPak's Reza Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Ramsdell. This bi-weekly podcast series features a variety of topics of interest to residence life and housing professionals who work in this area or work with them. Explore, again, just a variety of topics. And the topic today feels especially unique, something that I feel like has thankfully become a bit more normalized for people to talk about. And for my own sort of context, places like TikTok, I've seen a lot of people kind of sharing their stories and normalizing neurodiversity. So for our conversation today, we're really anchoring it around the residence life experience, sort of how it shows up in those spaces, how we can best support those students, you know, as staff members, just be a little bit more knowledgeable on this. I think we'll just kind of go through some resources and kind of some foundational knowledge. So very pleased to have our guests here to talk about it. So we'll have them introduce themselves and go over their professional background to kick us off.
Hi, happy to be here. Hi, my name is Sam Ferrigno. I use she, her pronouns. I'm currently working at UMBC in residential life. I'm a community director here. I live on campus with about 500 students in a upperclassman residence hall. It's more of an apartment style. So to talk a little bit, I guess, about what my higher ed background is. So I actually, like many people in higher ed, I did not start out in higher ed in undergrad. I think very few people know that they want to do that in undergrad. I was a 3D animation major at RIT up in upstate New York. I was the super involved student that did absolutely everything. Student government, I was an RA, I was a tutor on campus. So after that, I decided I wanted to do this professionally. So I went to Bowling Green State University to get my master's in college student personnel. I worked in residential life there as well, you know, at the graduate level, but doing a lot of similar work to what I do now. And then graduated May 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. So I scrambled to find a job, which I did. I started out my professional career at MICA, which is a small private art school in Baltimore. Spent about a year and a half there. Decided I was looking for a public institution, something a little bit more traditional. So that's how I wound up here at UMBC, which is in Baltimore County. So I really love Baltimore. Wanted to stay nearby, so that's how I found myself here. And I just celebrated my first anniversary at UMBC in January.
Yeah, congrats. And I actually lived in Baltimore City for 3 years, a couple of years ago. So it's been a little while. Excited to actually go back with my family soon. But yeah, it's a great city, and UMBC is a great institution. And just appreciate you kind of just embarking on this journey during a very, you know, ambiguous, tumultuous, disruptive time and everything. But, you know, throughout all this time, thankfully, I think it has laid bare so many things that were sort of just like kind of swept under the rug, you know, right there under the surface, had been going on for a long time, but sort of exposing really the realities of people's lived experiences and how they sort of showed up in work and showed up in educational environments and everything. So one big part of that is neurodiversity, which I feel like has really sort of reached an apex of just familiarity to people, sort of a little bit more of a household term. But we'll start out, just in case maybe people haven't heard that or have been hearing it, but not quite sure what it means. How would you define neurodiversity?
Yeah, I think the simplest way to define it is, you know, not everyone experiences the world or interprets the world in the same way. Our brains all work a little bit differently. So something like autism can be found like in this, under this umbrella of neurodiversity very easily, right? Autism itself is a huge umbrella of, different personalities and different people. But something as well as ADHD or dyslexia, really just anyone who doesn't experience things in a way that we find quote unquote typical, can find themselves under that umbrella.
Yeah. I think that's a good, concise way to explain it. And the fact that, you know, over, you know, the past several years, there's even been more kind of understanding and knowledge base and research coming out around all those sort of different, sort of ways that people can experience the world. You know, it has been something that higher ed has been grappling with and interfacing with and supporting students through. But I think just the normalization of people talking about their experiences and sharing, you know, advice with one another and all that has been really interesting to see. And I think, you know, I guess as like a clarifying question for, you know, I'm sure other folks might be kind of wondering this sort of like, what was sort of the anchor for you around that, you know, like what sort of drew your interest or, you know, what has maybe been your experience being kind of exposed to even, I guess, like the term, you know, neurodiversity and those sort of things, like what's sort of your history?
Yeah. So I have a couple family members that are close to me that would find themselves like, would describe themselves as neurodiverse. I have a cousin who is autistic. My brother actually, he is turning 30 this year. And just last month, he was diagnosed with ADHD with a slow processing speed. So growing up with him and knowing there's always something a little bit different about him, but that I couldn't really necessarily put it to words, really gave me that curiosity. So when I was in graduate school, I took a couple of counseling classes on the side in addition to my higher ed classes. So I learned a lot about developmental disorders as well as specifically the autism spectrum, you know, supporting these people through crisis because their support, while sometimes it can be similar to support that neurotypical students need, it isn't always the same.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a perfect you set me up for a perfect segue to my next question is that idea of like, you know, these are students who need support just like any other student, but, you know, falling under this umbrella, the way that you support them may need to be, you know, likely will be different. And even just that idea where, you know, I think a big change in why maybe there's just more sort of in the ether about this is that like exactly that sort of situation of somebody who is older and has felt sort of like, man, why is this so hard? You know, like, why is it hard for me to focus or pay attention or do this or that, you know, in my life? And they get this diagnosis and it's sort of just like, oh my gosh, finally, you know, I have something to sort of make it a little bit more tangible and specific and I can try to find resources and support on that. So, you know, I think more students are coming in with that knowledge and then it may be that we even maybe help them get connected with resources to, you know, figure out how they can kind of better, you know, get the support they need and those sort of things. So, you know, what are ways that, you know, this might come up to staff on campus? I assume it's more so, you know, students who have kind of self-identified, they know sort of, you know, the things that they're grappling with, but just, and maybe from your experience of sort of how this is something that you've encountered.
I think the first major important thing to recognize is that support for these students as well as any other student is individualized. Just like with the autism spectrum, you know, everyone's needs are different. So going in with a baseline of understanding of, you know, what this disorder looks like, you know, what this condition looks like is good, but making assumptions based on, oh, well, I know one other person that has autism and this is how they want to be supported. So this is like where I'm going to start with you. It's probably not a good thing to do. I mean, it's one of those things where like, you know, good intentions, you know, may not always lead you to where you want to end up. So I guess the question was specifically like what kind of support? So I think one major thing that I've noticed just in my time as a higher ed professional is advocating for like policy review and policy changes. You know, again, with intent and impact, right? We write our policies because we want our students to be safe, to be happy, to be healthy. But we don't always think about, you know, the neurotypical student, how this impacts them differently, how they interpret the rules differently. So with everything, I think being explicit is really important. So thinking specifically about like Res Life, we always have our, you know, our list of items that are prohibited in the halls, candles, your hoverboards, and that was like a hot topic when they were exploding and catching fire. And a lot of times those lists are, you know, this is the list, but this may not be a comprehensive list. And I understand that, right? You know, we can't possibly predict every single item a student could bring into their room, but being very specific with that list of items is as much as we can and is like, you know, all encompassing as we can really will help a student who may look at your list and interpret it very literally. So you might say hoverboard, but they've got an electric scooter. And, you know, if the battery problems are the same between these two items, they might say, but the rules say hoverboard, not electric scooter. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to get in trouble for it, or they might not. I don't know how every school runs their conduct process. But things like that, where you're implying a lot of things, some students can pick up on that, but not everybody can. I also think a big thing is training not only our professional staff, but also our paraprofessional staff, in how to recognize different forms of neurodiversity. When I was a graduate student, I worked with the RAs, and they were dealing with a duty situation where they had come across a student that was having trouble speaking, having trouble walking, and to them, it just looked like this student had had too much alcohol. They were stumbling back to their room, and you know, they, you know, should be documented for being underage and drinking alcohol. But when I asked them afterwards, they didn't smell any alcohol in that student's breath. They didn't like ask the student any questions. They didn't think to stop and talk to him. They just said, I see, you know, what looks like someone who's drunk, so I'm going to document them for being drunk. And it turned out that that student didn't drink alcohol at all, that they had a disability that impacted their fine motor functions, like such as their speech and their how they would walk. So it's those RAs never had any kind of training to recognize that. And so they just called a spade as a spade, but they were incorrect in their judgment. And I think that that can really impact that student's relationship with like residential life. Like they think that, oh, these people, you know, they don't want to interact with me. They just want to get me in trouble. And now they don't, like my RA no longer feels like a safe person to talk to because they've judged me before they've actually gotten to know me.
Yeah, that's a powerful anecdote because it makes me think too of like, if, you know, kind of the a whole kind of notion around sort of like fighting words or something, you know, like, so there could be situations where it takes a very different sort of perspective when you see that this person may have been sort of triggered because, like, you know, the stimulation of like loud noise or this, that, the other thing, like what they were doing, or even just like, you know, the idea with like lights or something, like there's different things like that, you know, inciting a reaction or doing something where you might be like, hey, you shouldn't have like yelled at them or whatever. It's like, oh, well, you were like trying to get them to stop doing something to you that was like just totally throwing you off. So it's like, it's more on them. They were really, you know, inciting you to have this reaction where you're making an assumption where it's like, oh, well, they're in the wrong because they're yelling at this other person who is, you know, blasting their music or whatever. And it, you could really kind of have a lot more empathy to a person knowing kind of more about their situation. You would hope that, yeah, the student staff and the professional staff can get to know their residents and build enough of a rapport to kind of have a good familiarity with folks' situations. But yeah, I mean, I think it's so interesting to me too. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this of like, there could be, again, that idea where, you know, you have students who are really stressed out because they're like, you know, falling behind on work and these sort of different things where like, you might be trying to just be like, well, let's just like help you with time management. But it's like, you could also approach it differently, understanding that, again, there's a wide umbrella of neurodiversity of like, even thinking like you may want to like try to see if you can get set up with the counseling center. Like they could just talk to you about like, okay, you're stressed and how do you manage that stress? But also just like, tell me a little bit more about like why you feel like you can't focus. Like, you know, is it the environment or, you know, other environmental factors? So like even that kind of level of like, almost sort of like getting meta for a minute of just being like, wait, hold on a second. Like this student's like really having like a tough time focusing on schoolwork. Like, and it's that same idea where it's like, if you can get that epiphany and then start to sort of navigate the world knowing like, oh, okay. Like if I sort of, you know, structure my routine or something in a different way, that could just really unlock, you know, my full potential. Do you have any thoughts on that of just sort of like thinking how you can be supportive of students, whether they self-identify at that moment as being, you know, having ADHD or something, like you can maybe try to start to help them down a path to better explore themselves to kind of, you know, maybe find that out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. I think that that's actually, you know, an issue that a lot of students struggle with. Some students don't want to identify as someone with a disability because of the stigma. And even if you look at like different accessibility services offices, some of them still say like disability services, which, you know, really veers a lot of students away from seeking that help when, you know, just a simple name change to accessibility services or something similar could really, really make the difference. But yeah, I think so at UMBC, one of our big tenets, I guess, of our work is restorative practices. And that one phrasing that you had just said, you'd said, tell me about this. Tell me about why you think you're struggling. And I think that's a big component of restorative practices is like getting students to share more of their experience so you can help them more effectively and like not putting them in the box of saying, well, like you seem to be struggling with this, so this is the help that I'm going to give you. So yeah, I definitely think that just starting those conversations in a very non-confrontational way, in a way that really allows a student to share as much or as little about themselves, even if they end up sharing very little about themselves, which happens a lot, it at least gives you some piece of a puzzle that you can start to put together. So as you're building rapport with the student, you know, if all they share in one meeting is, yeah, I'm having trouble focusing or keeping a schedule, then the next time you meet with them, that's all you ask. You ask, hey, like, I know you talked about last week, you know, you had trouble with your schedule. I'm seeing that you came 5 minutes early to your meeting today. So that must be going really well. Tell me more about what you've been doing differently, or, you know, the opposite. You were 5 minutes late today. Tell me what hasn't been working for you this week if you're still struggling with your schedule.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of the follow-up question. You know, tell me more about that. Or just, yeah, like kind of keeping like good notes and record, you know, about those conversations. You can kind of check back, be like, oh, that's right. You know, like, you know, they're saying they're struggling with their schedule. And it's like, even just that idea of like following up with like, oh, is that something that you've like, feel like you've struggled with for like a while? You know, like, is that going to be like, it has been a problem for me for my entire life. And it's like, all right. And then like, it's even just those simple things of like, if you have a very, and this, again, it is the same thing, like you're saying, like people being willing to share and being willing to kind of seek out help and accept that help and sort of, you know, take whatever advice they might be getting from the accessibility center or counseling center or something. But like, you know, the idea of one meeting with an RA, with a counselor or whatever, and if that is just like, okay, well, I think it might be helpful for you to go talk to this person, like just even quick one interactions where they can kind of route somebody, you know, versus it being, you know, which I think is just kind of a chronic problem in higher ed, which, you know, a lot of institutions are doing good work to work towards, but just that idea of like, well, we've built it, it's here. Like if they feel like they need help, we'll be happy to help them. But if it's like kind of like the tap on the shoulder, the nudge, the follow up to check it, you know, so like, you know, RAs and stuff being in such a powerful position to kind of like point them and be like, I think this could be really helpful for you. Like try to see if you can get in to talk with somebody and, you know, let me know how that goes. And you can follow up if you haven't heard from them to see like, were you able to get in? You feel like that was helpful. And, you know, just that idea of like that, you kind of know sort of where they are, where they're trying to get to and how that journey is going and how you can be supportive. And again, being very curious and empathetic and understanding of like the idea, if somebody says like, oh yeah, I've been showing up late to stuff or whatever, I can't keep deadlines. It's like, just keep a schedule, man. Like, you know, that'd be the idea where like, you think you're like, sort of like, let me just give you some great advice. You probably should try to keep a schedule. Like, and it's like, yeah, I mean, that's what everybody's been telling me for my entire life. So it's like, as you start to kind of like, you know, get more to the core of who that person is and how they sort of experience the world, it can be like, okay, I can't just tell you to like, you know, make a better calendar. It's like, I kind of, you know, can hopefully have some resources to pull from of like, this is what I've seen for other people that works well when they are having really hard time focusing, or, you know, they needed to be really specific about, you know, what they need to do when and who they're giving it to and what format on what platform and, you know, all those sort of details and stuff. So like, it's, I guess, just getting into, yeah, just more specificity, hopefully tailored to that person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some students, really what they need is just, we talked briefly about the counseling center, but being walked to the counseling center. So like, even though I work with upperclassmen students, I am so surprised every day how many of them don't know the resources that we have on campus. You know, I've been working here for a year, they've been here for 3 or 4 years. And I get students asking me, how do I know what dining service is open today? We'll just go on the dining website. But no, you know, I will sit them down in my office. I will pull up the website. I will have them write down the phone number, if there's a phone number they need, in their phone, or if they want to write someone an email, I'll be like, hey, just like start a draft and write it to this person so that once you leave my office, like you can finish writing your email. But yeah, really just giving students the support they need in the form that they need, for sure.
Right. I think that's another good example where, and it's like by no fault of their own, I think professionals sometimes, like, you know, by matter of like bandwidth or, you know, whatever else, like they would say in that situation is like, you know, oh, you need something from dining services or whatever. It's like, well, just like send them an email. It's like, it's on the website. So just look it up and just get it and just do it. And then just everything will be fine. And like, you know, it would be the idea of like, yeah, like writing it down for them or yeah, giving them the sort of tips of like, because that's honestly something I do all the time is like, I need to draft this email with the person's, you know, thing and the subject and even just scribbled, you know, just kind of gobbledygook in the body of it to know like, oh, that's right, I need to email this person, you know, about this thing, here's the deadline or whatever else, like, and I'll, you know, pretty it up. But it's just showing that level of care of, yeah, trying to go as far with them as you can, you know, is helpful to any student, but especially the ones who, yeah, are maybe going to struggle with the focus or need it very explicitly drawn out. It's like, not just like, hey, just reach out to dining services. It's like, who is it calling? Is it email? Like, you know, like all these things, you just might be like, and it's still just sort of a quick pivot and kind of adjusting how you would approach that. But it's like, it doesn't hurt for a lot of these times. And this is something that I try to anchor a lot of stuff that hiring professionals, I feel like, should be doing around just sort of like, whether it's digital engagement, all this, like a lot of these things are just helpful to everybody. Like if you just present information to people with kind of anticipating what level of detail they need versus just assuming like, hey, it's fine, just contact this person, whatever. It's like, no, let me just like take a pause and, you know, anticipate what most people might need. And then like, if I don't need it, then it's no, you know, no harm, no foul. But for the folks that do really benefit from it, then it's just a game changer to have, you know, staff kind of adding that additional level of care, additional level of detail and specificity, and you know, just making sure to kind of follow up and ensure that, you know, things are happening as well. But yeah, all just kind of good advice generally for students, but then especially for students who are, you know, under this neurodiverse umbrella. So, you know, with everything that we've covered, you know, you're certainly coming at this just from, you know, you've experienced it in your family, you're working with these students every day. I don't know if there are particular resources or things that you found that, you know, have been helpful for you or that you just know are just good general resources that you'd want to refer people to explore this topic a bit more.
Yeah, so I think that there are a lot of resources and you don't always have to go super far for them. If the university that you work at or the university you're closest to has some kind of graduate or undergraduate field, you know, in counseling or in like autism spectrum disorders, you can take classes or you can talk to the professionals that do research in this area. I'm sure they'd be more than happy to talk to people who are curious about their work. And I think it's also like one of those like fabled bridges between student affairs and academic affairs that we can really like take advantage of. Accessibility services, they should, you know, they should exist at all universities. I don't know if they actually do. That's one of those resources that I would definitely take with a grain of salt. You know, no university is perfect. So some students may really dislike their accessibility services. And it's important to listen to students when they say, oh, no, it's like, you know, it's not providing us with what we need. But at least familiarizing yourself with what your accessibility services or disability services office does offer to students can help make those referrals more effective, right? What we were just talking about of, oh, well, you need more time on tests. I know for a fact that that is something that you can go talk to this specific person about. You need to bring a doctor's note or some kind of like official medical documentation, but this specific person like will help you get the help you need in that specific area. So just familiarizing yourself with that. I'm looking into like professional development as well. Back in October, I think Aku Hawaii had done a webinar where they had like presented some grant-funded research on students with autism. Where I, you know, it was a digital webinar. If you attend, you get the recorded video. I'm sure they would be happy to provide the recording to anyone who wants it as well. I think, let me see, it was the Aku Hawaii funded research grant webinar. Residential Students on the Autism Spectrum, Belonging and Inclusion. So that's the full title of it. So I learned a lot there. I think that's a great like entry level. Like if you don't really know anything about the subject, like that's a great webinar to view. Even looking at just a couple other things, let's see. One resource that another like grain of salt recommendation is the APA, the American, I think it's the American Psychiatric Association. So the reason I give this one with a grain of salt is because the APA looks at a lot of diagnoses and disorders with a very medical perspective. They're looking of like, how do we cure this thing or how do we treat this thing? And less of like a social science thing of like, how do we like adapt our society to accommodate these people? But if you're just looking for just raw knowledge of like, you know, these are symptoms, these are causes, these are, you know, this is just like the medical terminology for like what this student is going through, then I definitely think that that's a good like medical perspective to learn about. Because I think while the medical perspective may not be as applicable to what we do, I think it still is good knowledge. Yeah, so I guess, yeah, that's what I think what really helped me as I was starting my journey. Of course, lots of textbooks as well. I mean, I could go pull those up and read the titles off if you really wanted me to. But honestly, just looking into like any nearby programs for developmental disorders and autism spectrum disorders.
Yeah, that's a lot of great stuff. And I think, yeah, again, it's just refreshing to see that folks are sort of just, you know, talking about this head on and working from a perspective of, yeah, like, how do we accommodate these students? And that's why like Accessibility Center could be applicable here. You know, I do think, yeah, like on some campuses, it's going to be a little bit more tailored to like in the classroom, like, you know, if you need sort of a different testing environment or extra time or those sort of things. But, you know, so that I think that's just a good general point of advice too, where like, okay, like look on your campus first, like there could be great opportunities to collaborate with colleagues and then certainly, you know, just the professional organizations kind of really interfacing with this and putting those resources out there. But, you know, there is just certainly like a place where it's like, you know, getting that, like, because I guess like, you know, the APA makes me think of just like what you're saying of like kind of going for like the textbook kind of like dictionary sort of thing. I was just like, okay, like how do you define, you know, an autism spectrum disorder or something? Like what does that mean? Because it is like just, you know, especially something like dyslexia, which I think could be, you know, well suited to be accommodated by like an accessibility center, is like, you know, just the way that you interface with trying to read or, you know, language, it's just like kind of getting that, like, okay, that is literally what that means. That this is way that, you know, these people interact with the world, like that's going to be a bit more explicit. So it's like trying to find that and then, you know, build upon that just as you understand everything that's sort of in the neurodiversity umbrella. But I appreciate, you know, you and folks like you who are, you know, committed to sort of sharing out sort of their advice and best practices and tips and tricks and resources and everything else. So we'll certainly have ways to connect with everything that you mentioned, the show notes and everything. So just really appreciate you hanging out and sharing all that you did.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.